The ACN podcast is made possible thanks to the generosity of our listeners and sponsors, including the Agile Alliance. As a nonprofit membership organization, the Agile Alliance is an excellent resource to help you along your Agile journey. To learn more about the Agile Alliance and our other sponsors, as well as how you can become a sponsor or supporter of our show, please visit acnpodcast.org for more information. And thank you for your support. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Agile Coaching Network. My name is Ray Rell. I am the host. This particular podcast and live event is brought to you by the Agile Alliance. The Agile Alliance, if you don't know who we are, we're a nonprofit organization that's supported by our members, and that membership and support actually helps us to do things like this podcast and other initiatives that we do. I encourage you to go up to agilealliance.org, give a look about what type of services that are available for you if you're starting an Agile adoption. There's quite a bit of information up there, and if you're membership. As always, thank you for being a member. If this is your first time calling in or listening to this podcast, a couple things to keep in mind. This is a community of people that are coming together. We have a few people that are on the call that were sort of, you know, we seed in the conversation to get the conversation going. But everyone that's on the call has the ability to join in and to give their perspective. And it doesn't matter whether or not you're new to Agile or if you've been with Agile for, you know, as long as I have, which has been over 10 years. So let's go ahead and get started. As we do every month, we actually start off with something we've collected from the Narrative Project. And the Narrative Project is where we've been collecting stories from people who are doing Agile adoptions. And these particular stories enable us to kind of see, you know, dominant patterns of goodness and also things that are not so good that's going on within our Agile community. And this month's story is one that we want to see less of in our Agile community. And the story goes, "Always left behind. I can't seem to get my manager to agree to send me to training. My company has the belief that you own your own employability. I have no problem with this concept, but at the same time, I'm young in my career and I can't afford to go to any of the cool conferences. Plus, I've seen many senior developers and managers go to events. They're mostly men, and I can't help to see a double standard. I feel stuck." This particular story is 100% concern. This person thinks it's 100% common. They believe if their direct manager read the story, they would 100% disagree with the story. Middle manager also 100% disagree, and the executive would 90% disagree. In all cases, if you think about that, that's just a big pattern of distrust of being able to even open up this particular type of things. And so the question is, with this particular story, how do we dampen it? How do we see less stories like this moving forward? Who would like to start?
I think that there are a couple of issues at hand here. One is a junior person, self-admittedly, right? A junior person, young in their career, may be seeing challenges that the senior folks are the ones who actually get selected to go to conferences. Oftentimes, unfortunately, this is seen as a perk rather than truly based on development need. So the first thing I would recommend is for, if as an individual you have a specific interest to go to a conference, make sure that you're raising your hand. That's the first thing. Make sure that when you have opportunities to have a one-on-one with your direct report, that you're expressing the interest and to make a good case for what it is you want to learn, right? Not just, hey, I really want to go to this conference, but here's how I think it could help me meet my development objectives and therefore deliver more value for the company. So that is the first thing. The second thing I would recommend is, like, you know, I don't know what the characterization is around cool conferences, and I will share that I've been to lots of cool conferences that are one day, low cost events that, yes, I've done out of pocket, you know, myself to attend those one day conferences. And you can get a ton of value out of them. You don't have to go to a multi-day conference to meet lots of great people in our industry, a lot of fantastic speakers. They do show up at these one-day events, and I would encourage you to, you know, find something that you can actually afford to do yourself. And as far as affordability, maybe you can actually make a trade with your manager that you're allowed to go to the conference on company time, but you are financially supporting it yourself.
Those are good suggestions. Brian, do you have a suggestion as well?
So I think the thing that concerns me is the feeling that there's a double standard, where it may just be that the conference is considered a senior, you know, senior level perk. I think that would be, in addition to what Linda's saying about the, you know, attending local events, you know, at meetups and the Agile Beyond, there's a lot of local things in Seattle, I know, that you could certainly attend. It's very cost-effective. Actually, they usually feed you if you go on and attend, and it's just a couple hours of commitment. But I would think that if somebody's feeling like there's a double standard or that's a part of the decision here, if they don't feel like comfortable going to HR directly, a lot of companies now have like diversity affinity groups or other things where I think that's certainly something that where this could be discussed with them. Like, I would hate to see somebody feeling like they're not getting the development opportunities because there is a double standard in the organization. That's a terrible thing.
I think where I work, have a similar situation with the budget constraints for training. So I actually came up with some of the suggested opportunities for, the teams, Scrum Masters and whatnot. So we decided to organize. And again, I think we all can be change makers of ourselves, seeing the situation, and potentially then we'll be recognized by those people who potentially would have been, in the situation that's described, and then we'll be given the opportunity. So some of the suggestions that I have are, first of all, we do a weekly four training forums where, somebody can volunteer to do a training on topic, or we together watch a webinar or participate in a discussion like these. And then provide an opportunity for discussion and learning opportunities during lunch and learn type of setting. Then also there's a lot of meetups outside of office hours, so sometimes in the evenings. And then we do like a team building activity. We gather after hours around 5-6 o'clock, and go to those meetups where basically whatever is offered at the conferences, those meetups offer one session once a month. And there's multiple meetups. Agile Alliance offers them, obviously, a Scrum user group meetings all over. So those are great free training opportunities that provide, drinks and dinner as well, and a great team building activity where if you put it on people's calendars and be the change maker by introducing free training per se, then it actually sets you apart and demonstrates that you do want to provide those training opportunities, knowing that there's budget limitations potentially. Also realizing that potentially management has a difficult decision with budget constraints of only sending one or two people to expensive conferences. So there are opportunities where you can actually be a volunteer at a conference where the conference then will pay for your admission ticket. And I think to earlier point, then, you still go on company's time, but you don't pay for the conference. So you either volunteer to be a conference volunteer or actually submit a talk and present at a conference, also potentially having an opportunity to be engaged in that conference or event in some capacity.
Okay, so what we are doing is something like key user training. It's something like the person who is going to the conference will offer afterwards to do some presentation about the conference he was in. So even the younger ones who can't go to the conferences, they can participate on the training the senior level has got. So this might be also a chance to do to give the knowledge somebody gets out of a conference to give it to somebody else.
So this is Alireza. I agree with Margaret. That's something I do as well when I'm training, like especially when I'm training the Scrum Masters. But one thing is that, for example, I will not send a junior Scrum Master to a training to learn about psychological safety while they're still like trying to find out what is a Scrum, how to send a message about different things. So like it depends on the conference, and many of the conferences out there might be really high level. So if I send a senior person, the gain from that conference might be a lot more than a junior person who can use trainings, who can read books, who can find the stuff like principal stuff on websites, on YouTube, on different things. So only I decide to send out people if I see them, they are going to meetups, they learned over trainings and like everything that they have in hand. And then conference is a place for a person to go and be able to learn on their own, because there are many things going on. You should be really fast. You should know the principles and the basic stuff. So that's sometimes why a junior person can't go to some of the conferences.
May I ask a question along that line real quick? So are you one of the first line, are you a first line manager?
I'm overseeing the Agile team, so all the Scrum Master and thing, the product owners and those things.
So my question, I guess, is do your employees know that?
Yes.
Okay.
So basically, I send out meetups. These are the meetups that you can go. And I tell them, like, you know, while you're doing this, you like while I feel like you're training yourself, you know the basics. And then I'll try to find a budget to send you out. But like, as long as I don't see anyone going to a meetup for 6 months, I cannot justify to send out people for training. So that's something I explain to the team, like directly, very explicit.
Okay. How about others?
Yeah. Hi, this is Monica. I wanted to add that in my experience over the last 2 to 3 years, many of these so-called cool conferences, they end up being, you know, just going from one session to another session without much depth. And in the last 6 months, I have discovered that attending the pre-conference workshop, which are just half day, sometimes one day, and at a fraction of a cost, they are much more beneficial, where I get the opportunity to meet with authors of the book in a much more smaller environment. Whereas in the big conferences where they are giving keynotes, all of that stuff I can find on YouTube, maybe just 7 days down the lane. Whereas the deep conversations, especially if we are seeing from the agile coach hat, like what organization transformation, what experiment have you done? It is the pre and the post conferences and the smaller workshop, the smaller meetups where it is much more value I'm getting.
Along with the meetups, what we have done is we bring in local coaches on volunteer basis about an hour during the lunchtime. Everybody can bring their lunch. And basically, the coach, what the volunteer coach does is we raise specific problems in the company so he can enlighten the so what we do is we collaborate with other industries also. So you don't have to go to a conference or anywhere. So this works out cheaper. And, you know, no one will be, you know, left out attending a conference or something like that. So this is working out really well. So, you know, what do you call a collaborative coaching from other industries, bringing into your own environment is a great way to help everybody out. So it is very cost effective. And you can get different perspective from different industries.
That's a very good point. I think that when we're looking at, you know, training opportunities, you know, great management actually is always looking for being able to, yes, find the low cost thing that they can bring into the teams and to have, you know, the biggest span that they can. Back when I was at Intel Corporation, we had 28 internal conferences where we had like Ron Jeffries and Chet, you know, come in and do their whole thing. We've had actually all of the Agile Manifesto authors, you know, come in, and we know that it made it easier for them because it was on site, but there's still expense there.
Steve Fraser here.
Hey, Steve.
So one of the things that, you know, positioning is agree to send me to training, I think is already, putting somewhat of a negative consequence on it. It should be more a question than, like yourself, I've come from big companies like Nortel, Cisco, Qualcomm, HP. These companies tended not to send people to conferences unless the attendee had something to give to the conference. And even somebody early in their career can be offering to participate or organize a panel or give a presentation at some of the smaller conferences like XP 2019, which is coming up in a couple of weeks in Montreal. There are lightning talks, which are, you know, very short and to the point, but at least it gives visibility to your company of their interests. And it sort of becomes not just training for you personally, but a brand positioning visibility thing for your company. So it becomes somewhat of a win-win. And also, as others have pointed out, you might get a discount on the conference costs. And if you look for things locally, of course, that will reduce the travel costs. Anyhow, some ideas.
No, those are great because, you know, I've been attending the Agile Open Northwest that's over here near Portland for, I don't know, a decade. It seems like it's been a long time. But the reason why I go to it is, one, it's pretty low cost, and it is the open space format is really good for first time speakers. You don't have to go through some selection process and all the other different things. It's, hey, I want to go talk about X. And that format is really powerful for allowing first time people to be comfortable with going up and owning a topic and presenting about it, you know, their perspective, and then collaborating with people. I am going to go ahead and switch over to the main questions. So the first question up here is, what is a small move the needle way to get started to shift a large organization, approximately 3K employees, from a multi-year project funding to more of an agile funding model? Who would like to start that?
Okay. My experience with this one, at least for us, that was the small move the needle step, was that the product development people just started to talk to the financial controllers. And when we did the agile transformation, we had a financial controller on the transformation team. And that enabled us to convey what is agility about to that financial controller. And that person then was starting to think together with us, okay, how could the financing model look in the future when we are moving away from large 200,000 man-hour projects into much more distributed, fine, granular feature development.
Linda, you had a comment on this.
So I'm working at a very large client right now, over $1 billion organization with, I think, 17,000 employees. So this is clearly a big problem. And they really are just getting started on their transition to being more agile. And luckily, it's funded by the executives very highly. And the approach that I'm taking is actually just meeting with some of the key influencers in finance and just sharing with them articles and books for them to read and starting the conversation to get them to start to think differently about how they fund big projects. While at the same time, you know, teams are starting to work towards proving that they can deliver in shorter burst, and we can start to see return on investment sooner. So in this particular case, we're, you know, kind of very early in the adoption, certainly within their first 6 months, I guess, at this point. But I think that education of the influencers is really the best way to start. And I definitely have garnered some interest there, and I'm getting feedback on the reading. So that alone is telling me that this is at least a good place to start. And with a goal of, by the time they reach their annual budget cycle, that we'll be able to have some good conversations around how could the funding model start to look different.
In my former role as a senior director, we really strived to understand how, now that we were in an agile model, what portions of that could be more from an iterative release of dollars rather than a big chunk release of dollars, because we were kind of suffering from hoarding as an organization, where, you know, if you somehow decided that you would fund, say, a peer in a particular venture because you felt that that was a better choice to go spend those dollars versus what you put into annual plan, you would get penalized the next year. They would say, oh, you gave away, you know, $20,000. So you clearly didn't need that $20,000, versus getting together and saying the highest value we can do with our total resources as a company, it was better to go spend it in that direction. Please don't penalize the people in that space. Who else has something to add to this?
Ray, this is Monica speaking. So I wanted to add, you know, I find that the most easy way to move the needle is to actually do a demo, or in other words, do a pilot. Like, take a program out and have it run in the agile funding model and demonstrate and protect that pilot from all other things which are happening in this 3K plus organization, and enable the practices which you have put in place and let it blossom. So that it's by itself, that example by itself speaks. And then, you know, you have demonstrated what can be done.
So one thing is that one thing that I heard from, I think it was Ian Maypole from Intuit. He said, I really liked it. It was moving toward agile. It should be an agile process. So you cannot just go and take one, like it's a good idea to take one team and make it agile, but, and then growing it, it's going to be like, it needs more things like keep making talks with the management, changing the process, changing people culture, changing the whole product process. All of these should go small steps with each other rather than going very horizontal and then fixing all the teams and then starting on the management, then starting on middle management. So everything should, I believe, should go small steps. So one thing, for example, I did, starting exactly as you said, I started 2-3 teams, helping them to become more agile, then pick a bigger team as an organization, helping the management to transition into leadership, and then working on the product side, helping them to understand a little bit how to do it more efficiently, and doing all of these at the same time instead of like finishing one and starting on the next step. So I think that would resolve the issue of looking at it, at it as an experiment instead, like it makes it a process that might take a while, but step by step, people will see some small results, but the big result will be in a longer term.
Right. And if I look back at this question too, you know, the project funding, and this is the things we had a real difficulty with, really defining what our kill points were on a project, you know, because we fall in love with the stuff that we develop. And even on a multi-year project, the data and the feedback from the customers become a very huge grounding force to say that we are done. And I think a lot of engineering teams, especially when you've worked on a project for multiple years, I think there's also another component there of, well, the funding model needs to be, you know, well grounded, and customers are using it, they're loving this product, and they want more, and make it pool based versus push based, you know, is another thing. Do we want to pivot to another, or does anyone else have any last minute comments on this particular question?
So I just wanted to add one more important thing is, mostly in organizations, we are seeing the coaches or the coaching at the team level. Now, if you are making such a big shift, and in a thing as important as finance, it's very important to have the coaching being actively at all levels of the organizations in such a situation, more so for the finance and the senior executives, for whom the funding and how things are budgeted for are very important.
Fully agree with that, absolutely.
Yeah, the biggest challenge I have personally faced, you know, because I've been doing consulting, I see various industries. The biggest challenge is, like, you know, the transitioning project manager mentality to more agile way of doing things. So that mindset have to shift. So, the project managers and upper management, they need more coaching on the transition, during the transition. So they always have that, you know, like, I mean, command and control, they always look at this one. So that's my 2 cents there.
Do you find in that model, and I run into this every once in a while, where senior managers have a view of, well, agile is what those people do?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's a common pattern, which if there are any, and I know we have actually CEOs and directors and everyone else who joins into our little network here. If any of you want to share your perspective, we would love to hear that. With that, though, if we want to pivot, everyone raise your hands who wants to pivot to the next question. We're going to vote for about 10 more seconds. Okay, we're going to pivot. Question archived. The next question is from Gene. What are the best approaches, ideas, and personal experience when trying to strengthen or build trust when the Scrum Master and the team are not co-located?
Ray, I could probably jump in on this one. I think one of the things that I found is, as much as possible, especially for the Scrum events, since we have Scrum Master, we're doing Scrum in this case. So make sure that the video conferencing with video is is there as much as possible. You know, you can't get the full effect of body language and everything if you're not co-located, but that's been one of the best techniques of just seeing everybody's face.
So this book called A Year Without Pants talks about the experience and ways and methods of being able to help virtual teams be able to connect at a bigger level.
We have tried this one. It did work. You know, in the earlier stages of team formation, virtual team we formed as a kind of, you know, to get everybody on the same page. What we did was we played something called as a personal map activity. So this helped actually. Like, I mean, people came up with this is how it is played actually. So one person asked the other person about their, you know, which are comfortable to answer to them, like, you know, where they're located, what's their education background, what is work and their hobbies and other things. They exchanged between those two guys, and actually we found people from different culture, different this one, they had a lot of common interests, so they have something to blend in and then collaborate with. So one fellow was a musician, other one was another musician. One plays guitar, other one plays drums. You know, I mean, this is how, you know, like when you try to bring a team collaboration, and then, you know, once you have some kind of a trust, they feel that, you know, they know this person since a long time with common interests. So that's a starting point. It did help. My team is working really well this time, this team.
So I've seen companies do this, and we do this, which is, you know, you just sort of have a, you know, a Slack or whatever your favorite collaboration tool to just go ahead and create a serendipity channel and, you know, just share. I'm, you know, I'm a geek. I work on all sorts of Hollywood props and other things, and has nothing to do with my normal day job, but some people find that interesting. So it's, you know, a place to just bump into people sometimes. How about others?
Henry, just to add to that, one thing we found helpful when a project or a product is launched, have a face-to-face workshop. Because during that discovery session, people build relationship. They get to meet each other, and they are in a context of a product inception. So that is very valuable. However, I want to add, if the entire team is at one location and the Scrum Master at another location, I would want to go into deeper reasons for why is that happening. Because unfortunately, I have observed sometimes they have certain development skills in one location, so all the developers are in that location, and they think that the approach is that the Scrum Master is someone that they can get from a cheaper location. So they put the Scrum Master role in another geography. So I would really question that approach if that is the situation here.
So this is Linda. I think there's one technique that if you are the Scrum Master of a remote team, it's very important for you to make sure that you're ensuring that every voice is heard each day, right? Whether that's during your stand-up call or some other time. It really is, you know, the Scrum Master's role to ensure that folks get a chance to exchange their ideas, even voice their ideas, and to encourage the interaction of everyone on the team, right? That will help build trust across the team, not only with the Scrum Master.
But it's something like when I'm working with a remote team, the most important is if I'm starting a project that I'm doing a ceremony where everybody is collocated for some kickoff meeting or anything, to get personally meet each other up in front. That's something like at minimum the Scrum Master needs to meet the people who are remote. So this is the best experience I've done. So everybody knows each other. And afterwards, what we have done as well, it was something like we have collocated the teams into one room together, and we have installed an all-over camera. So even if somebody is not in the room, he has the possibility via the video to see what's going on. And if he wants to, he can can hear what the other one is speaking around. And this is something like beside your collaboration tool, which helps a lot to give the people the experience to be within the team. I think we are trying out right now something like to have mobile video cameras, which we are walking around in the room. We are trying to do something like to have some remote, some digital boards and analog boards. We are trying to fix together via pictures. Everybody can speak up via collaboration tools and stuff like that.
Those are great ideas. We actually invested in telepresence robots. And the way we were able to justify it is that a cost of a flight to some location, if you did that five times, paid for this robot. And we found that having those available to people where they could beam into the other site and be able to walk around themselves was very valuable. To the point, and this is to, I think, just to managers and other funding people that are on this call, that first time that you meet somebody face to face, I've always found it to being the, once I shake the hand and get to know them a little bit in this, whatever meeting this might be, communication goes way up within groups. I mean, massively up. So when people are in that cost-cutting mode, thinking that I'm saving money by not sending a person to a location, you're actually costing money by not sending that person to that location, because there's a whole bunch of background stuff that this person gets no exposure to.
I think that the face-to-face is definitely the most important way to interact. But that said, in today's economy and market and global economy, I think that it's a realistic expectation that most teams will not be 100% co-located. Mm-hmm. And this was a topic actually in Agile Main Day last Friday, where we talked about all the different challenges of distributed teams and a lot of different ways that we could meet those needs. I think that what might be a larger challenge here than being co-located, when you mentioned, somebody mentioned earlier about having a team in India and a team in the US, I think the challenges there are more cultural than they are not being in the same room, from mm-hmm. my experience, because we have distributed teams that I work with that have members all over the country, as well as other teams that have teams in India and elsewhere. And I've noticed that the co-located teams where we have people spread all across East Coast to West Coast, we work it out and we all participate and we use video as much as we can and do team building. And it's one of the highest, teams I've ever worked with. They are all just amazing. So I think we have to also be sensitive to the cultural differences.
So Lisa, do people, I mean, we made heavy investments in cultural awareness. Did you guys do some investment in classes to, working with India, working with, other, did you have classes or did you have to learn on the streets on that?
Where I am now, we're still kind of in a middle-sized company. We're growing fast. And I don't think it's as much of a challenge here as I've seen at other companies. Mm-hmm. It was really more of my overall experience over the years that I was sharing.
Okay. I was just wondering whether or not in that experience, were you ever sent to a cultural awareness class to learn a little bit more about the culture you're working with?
I personally wasn't sent to a class, although one of my previous roles, I reported to somebody who was a U.S. citizen, but born in India, who shared mm-hmm. a lot of that, those cultural differences with us, and reminded us of the ceremonies and the different holidays, and that was helpful.
Right. Darius, you've had your hand up for a little bit. What do you have?
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up a little bit on what you mentioned about the face-to-face contact. That is really precious, and we know from science why that is, right? Recently, the mirror neurons, which were discovered in our brain, provided a really good scientific explanation. And it's kind of like speculative executions for those of you who understand. One of those viruses which happen in all the chips was that looking at the execution which processor makes and looking what's flowing through the pipe, you can predict what would be the likelihood of the next operation being addition, right? So you predict and you speculatively assume that this is going to happen. And it turns out that our brains are equipped with those neurons which are doing exactly the same thing. So when you're in the room with someone, your neurons are going to pick up the signals which you are not consciously aware of that you're picking them up. And you're going to read the things which you would not be reading on the phone. Video will definitely help here. But the other thing which I was going to say, which is important, is to establish a proxy. So if you can afford someone to send to the other country, to spend FaceTime with other people so they learn more and they can establish a trusted relationship, then when they go back and you have something you have to deal with, you can use your proxy to help you to deal with certain situations, especially if they are hot from the emotional point of view, etc. And those proxy guys can be helpful as well, if you cannot send everyone to establish the personal relationship.
Wonderful. We are about 5 minutes to the top of the hour. We're not going to have time for a big question next, but let me recommend Brian's got one that's about the next one down past the anonymous one, about what you're reading right now in the Agile space. Did we want to all just kind of shout out the type of books we're reading right now? I'll kick it off. I'm reading Steve Johnson's Emergence. I'm also going back over a book that I read a number of years back by Mark Kinley called Value Streams. So those are the two that I'm reading. Anyone else want to add their books that they're doing today?
Hi, Ray.
Yeah.
Steve Fraser. More Effective Agile, which is Steve McConnell's new book. He's the author of Code Complete. It's a roadmap for software leaders. Now, I must admit that I'm reading a pre-publication draft, but I understand that the actual book will appear shortly after June 1st.
Well, if he signs a copy for me, I'll do it. I'm kidding. how about others?
I'm reading Sense and Respond by Jeff Gottlieb, and I really like it. It's not specifically an Agile book, but it's about listening to customers and using that feedback to apply changes to a product. It's very quite Agile without ever really using any of the terms that many of us Agilists would recognize. And it's also available in audiobooks. So.
I love audiobooks. I'm dyslexic, so it saves me a bundle of being able to have access. How about others?
I was going to mention the book entitled Good Work, which is by Howard Gardner and Mikhail Csikszentmihalyi, the guy who popularized the notion of the flow, where they talk about how good ethics and morals is absolutely necessary in any type of work we do. And they use two examples from genetics and from journalism. But I think it applies to agile and engineering work as well.
Awesome. Someone else had one?
So, yes, I'm reading Capability Maturity, Kanban Capability Maturity Model by Dave Anderson. And also keeping a look at the Value Stream Mapping book. Also, what I'm reading on a day-to-day basis is a couple of weblogs by Mike Cohn, Al Shalloway, and looking at the LinkedIn page of Lean and Agile Development, like the comments and all those.
I'm reading Enterprise Agility using Beyond Budgeting, Sociocracy, and Open Space. This is by John Buck and Jutta. So it's an interesting read. Bringing various principles, various practices together for enterprise agility.
Oh, wonderful. So it looks like we're not going to have time for another question. In case you didn't know, we just crossed over 23,300 or so people have listened to the podcast as a replay. Thank you to everyone who's actually went out and promoted it. I was at Deliver Agile last week, and 10 of our members of this little forum came up to me and just started talking about their experience of being able to participate in this call. And it's all about members, right? It's all about us getting together and being able to share these ideas. And I really appreciate the success we've had with this call, because all of you is what's built it, which is really, really cool. If you guys want to visit me, actually, there's a couple different locations I'll be at over the globe for the next couple months. I will be actually at a Lockheed Martin private event at some symposium that they have. I'll be at their reception. So if you're a Lockheed Martin employee that got invited to this thing over in Orlando, I'll be there in a couple of weeks. After that, I'll be at Agile Testing Days in June. And if you haven't looked at the Agile Testing Days, it's different than it's not an Agile Alliance event, but they've got a really cool groove about talking about Agile and test together. Lots of great subjects that are in that space. And as we were able to negotiate with that particular event to be able to provide an Agile Alliance member discount for it. So if you are in the test community and you're looking for something in, you know, the US, specifically Chicago, and you are an Agile Alliance member, there's a special discount that's been made available to you. And that's going to go up in the newsletter really soon. The last one, of course, Agile 2019, which is an Agile Alliance event. They just posted who the speakers are. That's now up online. And I was at Agile Alliance staff over the weekend over at Deliver Agile, and they're telling me that the hotels are starting to book up. You know, we'll be at the Gaylord in Washington, D.C. this year. And I always get worried when the hotel gets booked, because that means that, you know, if we could, in fact, sell out this year. So if you're going to sign up for the event, sign up as soon as you can. So with that, I'd like to thank all of you guys. This is one of the greatest things for me during my every month. I look forward to each, and I thank you for your patience, because we had to move some of the calendars around because of just some of the travel and some of the other stuff that's going on. I appreciate your guys' flexibility on this. And with that, we're going to go ahead and close. Thank you all. This podcast is provided by the Agile Alliance for educational and informative purposes only. To find out more information about the member-supported Agile Alliance, please go to agilealliance.org to find out about more upcoming events, as well as different programs that are available to help you with your Agile journey.